Yo, what's happening? This is your host, Tinto. And before we get started on this weekend's episode, I have a special message from the sponsor for this episode, calling all Zimbabweans at home and abroad. Do you want to ensure that your family back home gets amazing value on premium quality meat delivered to your doorstep? If your answer is yes, then visit www.nyamabantu.com or download the Nyamabantu app and place your order in three simple steps. 1. Select your products. 2. Make a payment. And 3. They will deliver to your loved ones in no time. It's safe, convenient, and super easy. Visit Nyamabantu's easy-to-use online store today to order your mouth-watering cuts. Nyamabantu. Umuntu ngumuntu ngabantu. And with that out of the way, let's jump straight into this weekend's episode. And I hate to say this, but it does come with a trigger warning. The following episode is not suitable for those that may be triggered by issues relating to abandonment, addiction to habits of a sexual nature, grooming, and threats of sexual abuse. If these are likely to trigger you, I suggest that you be kind to yourself and skip this episode, and I'll catch you in next week's.
Hi, Tinto.
Hey, what's happening? How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Are you sure? Because I spoke to you earlier on in the day and you told me that you had a cancelled date.
I did, but I'm fine because I'm counting the red flags.
So. What's happening there? You know, girls trying to get back into the game and you're already getting cancelled dates, fam.
Yeah, so I just took it as one of those red flags. So well, I'm not going on another one with that same person now.
Well, maybe let's just find out. What was his reason for cancelling?
Well, he just said he had a breakdown and he had to call AA, you know, and then by the time his car was okay, he just assumed it was too late to come, so he just had to cancel.
Did he cancel or he postponed?
Okay, he tried to postpone. I canceled.
Ah, my guy. And you want to give him red flags. Okay, how about maybe you got some red flags, love? Why did you decide that, I'm not doing this date anymore?
Because at any sign of trouble, mm-hmm. I try to protect myself as much as I can. So
do you know what? Potentially you might be blocking a really good thing, because if a guy has told you that he can't make it and he's trying to make an effort to redo it at another time, you know, maybe give him half a chance.
Yeah, I'll think about that next time. It's just impulse. Listen, that just to protect myself.
The way you just said that, you're saying, Tinto, shut up. I ain't giving this dude no other chance, okay? And that's okay.
No, I will.
Anyway, welcome to the Feeling Station.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
For those listening to the podcast for the first time, it's a romantic family and friendship breakup podcast showcasing stories that people would like to talk about with a view to give lessons from their experiences. Now, I hope you find today's story entertaining, but more importantly, meaningful. And this podcast is popular for two main reasons, really. The first being, I do my best to keep you as my guest anonymous, which brings me to the fun part. The part that I give you the name that you're going to use for the duration of this episode. Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready.
Right. So we are sticking in line with keeping all names African. So I've gone over to East Africa. And the name that I'm giving you is called Mirembe, which is M-I-R-E-M-B-E. Mirembe. I don't know if you're going to remember that or you want to shorten it. Whatever you want, right? It's Mirembe. And what that means is woman of peace. But now that you chose violence with this guy who canceled his date, I'm not sure that's the right name I should be using for you.
No, I am a woman of peace, actually. It's a good name.
I long for the day that a person says that I am a person who chooses violence consistently all day.
No one says that.
All right, so your name is Mirembe.
Mirembe.
Yeah, Mirembe, yeah. What are you going to call the person you're talking about? Is it a person? Is it people? What are we talking about today?
Okay, there could be one main character.
Uh-huh.
That would be my mom.
Ooh.
And then there will be other characters along the way. So
Yeah. Okay, so we just keep mama's mom and she's the main character. So this is family breakup, as it were.
Not break up the same.
Explain.
But, it's something to do with maybe it's also contributing to why I canceled the date today.
Oh, right. Okay. Gotcha.
So I think it's dating back when I was a kid.
Okay, cool. And the second reason why the podcast is really popular is the real life lessons that people are going to learn from the story you're going to share. So what would you like someone listening to your story today to learn?
Okay, so I've got three lessons today.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, and the most important one.
Yeah.
Is parenthood is a ministry and is one of the most significant ways anyone can influence the life of another. Hey. Not put the responsibility on someone else.
Wow. Oh my goodness. Do you know what? That really hit home for me, because if people don't know already, I'm incredibly in love with my son, right?
Aww.
And the way that I describe what he is to me and what I am to him, I'm a guardian of a soul, period.
Yeah, exactly.
Is, you know, God entrusted me to be the guardian of his soul. So when I read what you just said, you say parenthood is a ministry and is one of the most significant ways anybody can influence the life of another. Don't put that responsibility on somebody else. I am incredibly protective of what comes around little man.
Yeah.
Not in the way that says, I know everything, so I'm shutting A, B, C, D, E out.
Mm-hmm.
But if I sense an aura that, okay, maybe as a grown adult, I wouldn't want my son to behave in this way, then I try and pull him back as much as I can.
Exactly.
Knowing that at this stage, he's forming his own personality and his own character, and I'll allow him to try and build that as much as possible.
Exactly. That's
but
the whole point.
But having somebody take that responsibility away from me as a father, as a dad, nah.
Yeah.
That will not happen. So that's number one.
Your son is blessed, by the way.
Well, hey.
That's number one.
Hey, thanks, man. And I'm blessed. In fact, I think I'm the one who's blessed to have him.
Oh.
Number two?
Number two, it's not entirely your fault that you're that broken.
Oh. Wow. Deep. Number three?
Number three, heal, forgive, and make a conscious decision. You owe it to move on. You owe it to yourself. No one is going to do it for you.
So I just play back those lessons for you to make sure I got them right. So number one, parenthood is a ministry and is one of those most significant ways anyone can influence the life of another. Don't put that responsibility on someone else. Lesson number two, it's not entirely your fault that you're broken. And then number three, heal, forgive, and make a conscious decision, right? You owe it to yourself to move on. No one will do it for you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Exactly.
So let's get into it then. So what's happening with you and mom? Take us way, way, way back to the roots of this.
Okay. Well, firstly, now we're perfect. We're good.
Good.
And just a disclaimer, because I've come across, I was trying to write a book, by the way, Tinto.
Mm-hmm.
About this whole journey, and then I kind of got some discouragement from family members thinking maybe you're trying to lay down your mom, like, you know, like she didn't do a good job. But my whole point is I really want mothers out there to understand lesson number one, because I feel the cycle keeps on going on and on. It happened in the generation of our moms, and I feel it's happening even now. With the whole immigration thing, people are moving. They say they've got no choice. They have to leave their kids with so-and-so so that they can go and settle first and then take their kids after so many years. But a lot can happen between that space of time that parents have no idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just because they're sending money, then the kids are fine. It's not about money. Not about money. So,
do you know, it's interesting you say this, because I was also listening to an interview on the Diary of a CEO. One of the guests that was on there said children do not care about money.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't. In fact, he says children don't give two shits about money. What they care about is that time with you.
Exactly.
And that really resounds, you know, I mean, resonates with what you've just said now, to say that just as long as the parent who's gone away feels they are giving the money, they feel like they're doing okay.
Exactly.
And this is enough, but what you're saying is that is not enough.
It's not.
Okay. Let's go for it.
Okay. So Mirembe, I think one abnormal thing I would say is she grew up as a child who chose to erase early memories of her childhood, what I would call selective amnesia.
Well, I'm gonna ask you to make this more relevant to you, because you're referring to Mirembe in third person. Mirembe is you.
Okay. So, you know, yeah.
Okay. If you can, okay. This would be more relatable for you and for me and for those who are listening. If you say I
shouldn't speak in third person. Yeah,
go for it. Own it.
Okay. So I'll start back from this incident when I was in grade one.
Yeah.
I was living with my aunt.
Why were you living with your aunt? Where was your mom?
Okay, listen, you get it as I go just now.
All right.
So right now I'm living with my aunt. I don't know where my mom is. That's the point. So I'm a kid. I know I stay with my aunt. I'm in grade one. We are playing outside. And then suddenly when we're playing, my aunt gets out of the house and she runs to the road like she's embracing somebody. Someone is coming. Mm. I see this woman who is coming to meet my aunt. And then my nieces and my nephews run also. And then I don't know this woman, so I continue playing. Mm. And then they get into the house. And then later, when I'm just tired of playing, I go into the house as well. And then I find other kids already. You know, when people visit, they bring goodies for kids and stuff. And when I got into the house, my cousins were already eating yogurt and ice cream. And I was told, you're not getting any because you did not run for your mom.
What?
I'm like, my mom. Okay. This was a stranger to me as far as I was concerned. That's why I didn't run to embrace her.
Right.
Now, when I started asking questions, this is fast forward to when I got to understand why I didn't have any memory of her, is when I was, I think, around 3 or 4, my mom visited to her homestead where she was born. Mm. And then when she was there, one of the aunts said, this child is now grown. Like, can you please live here with me? My mom was like, no, she's just a baby. And my aunt was like, no, she's old enough. Please just live here with me. And then you come and take her whenever she's not going to school. Then my mom left me. Then she went. She was in town. And then I was left in the rural areas. And I stayed there with my other aunt first. And then I stayed for a long time without seeing my mom. And so growing up, I then, by the time when her memory should have been engraved in me, she wasn't there.
Mm.
So by the time she came back to get me, I didn't know her. So they explained, well, it's your mom, you should be happy. You know, as a kid, I was just like, hi. But then I honestly, she was a stranger to me. I didn't know her.
Mm.
And then just as I was getting excited to the idea of calling someone mom, because everyone else was calling my aunt mom. I was the only one who was saying aunt. So I had someone to...
So out of curiosity, okay, at age 3,
mm-hmm.
a parent, in quotes, which could be your mom or your mom's sister. Yeah. This is your mom's sister, right?
Yeah.
Your mom's sister. They don't have to, but they can. Start saying, oh, yeah, call me mom.
Yeah.
Did she not try to get you to call a mom from age 3?
No.
So she was very clear that I am auntie.
It was very clear my mom was not there. But at that time as a kid, I don't think I was thinking about it much because, you know, when you're a kid, you just deal with what's there. It just affects your subconscious mind. But consciously, you just know auntie's there. I'm getting food. I'm okay.
Okay.
So that's what happened. And then so now when I'm finally starting to open up to the idea of calling her mom, apparently she was just staying for 2 or 3 days and then she would leave again.
Mm.
And then so she went, I remained, went back to calling my aunt, and then I stayed with my aunt for a year. After a year, my mom and my dad had to relocate to another place far from where my aunt was staying. And so they had to take me with because they couldn't leave me there. So I had to move. That was my first major move from when I was a kid because I've always been moving. So they had to take me from my aunt. I had to leave the school where I was attending. I had just gone to that school for a year. And then they took me with them to the rural areas. That's when I did my grade 2 there. Then after staying there for some time, my parents were like, this place is not good for a child. You know, we need her to have better education. So most probably you're going to have to go and stay with your aunt somewhere else again. So now this is my dead sister.
Right. Hold on a sec.
Yeah.
Why did your mom agree to leave you with your aunt in the first place at age 3?
Okay.
Now that you're an adult,
okay.
Have you been told why?
I did ask my mom, and then she said, you know, I was also, when your aunt said, can you please leave her? I didn't see anything wrong with it because, you know, you were okay. There was food. So now I was trying to explain, no, it wasn't a matter of food. It was a matter of you being there. She was like, no, it was just a decision that was made. No one really sat down to think about it or to discuss it. Your aunt just wanted a baby around. You know, she liked you so much and she wanted to be with you. And Tinto, this aunt that I stayed with when I was 3 is not the same aunt that I stayed with when I was in grade 1. This is aunt number 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from 3 years to a certain age, I stayed with aunt number 1. And then I left to go to another aunt who I stayed with when I was in grade 1.
So that answer that you've just given about what your mom said was the reason why she left you, if I'm an adult, would be insufficient and inadequate.
Yeah. It was because, fast forward. So one thing about me, I'm dark-skinned. And I'm the only dark-skinned person in my family. Everyone else is like super, super light. So at some point, I started questioning things. I was like, is there a possibility that maybe she took me there because maybe my dad was saying I'm not his child? And I had to ask that question and it wasn't taken too well. So at some point, I actually thought, those people, they really feel like family. They treat me like family. I've never felt any indifference or anything. But the reason that I was given just to say leave the child because I want to be with her didn't really hold water. But then, so that's why I started having all these questions and answers and theories in my head because of other things that I would see. But then, well, that's another story. So now my dad and my mom, when they realized, no, we want our child to have better education in the city, my dad had to take me to his sister. This is aunt number 3.
Jesus. And by this point, you're 6 years old.
By this time now, I'm 7 years old.
Seven, yeah.
I'm in grade 2. So bear in mind, these people, I've just been with them for a year. I'm finally getting to understand the family setup. Like, there's mom, there's dad, I'm the kid, we are a family.
Mm-hmm.
Just as I was getting that sense of belonging, I had to move again. And then I went to stay with my aunt. Now, when I was staying with my aunt, this was like sort of an extended family. This setup was everyone who had a child that they wanted to learn in town, they would just send that child to that family, to my aunt. So I feel that part where I was talking about putting responsibility on somebody else, sometimes people will end up as if they are evil people in courts when they are not, but the responsibility is just too much on them and it's not even theirs. So that's when life was really, really hard for me. And I learned things that I feel as a child at a certain point, you should be allowed to be a child. Now I was doing grown-up duties when I was in grade 3. That I was like 8 years old. I had already learned to prepare a meal for a whole family of 8 people plus.
Jeez.
I would step on a chair. I remember when I cooked my first, you know, sadza. We call it sadza back home. I would step on a chair and cook sadza in a big pot. When I was that young.
At 8 years old. Lord have mercy. You know, sadza is one of the things I really struggle to make. And God knows for what reason. I've tried every formula under the sun, right? I've done the thing where you put the maize meal, add cold water, stir it, have a thin paste, add more water, bring that to a boil, and then gently add more and more and more of wofu.
I think that's the most complicated.
It still doesn't come out right. I'm at the point where I'm like, Sadza, you can piss right off, right? I've quit. I enjoy it, but I've quit. And this is for a small pot. And most of the time that I've worked on that pot, I break a young sweat.
Mm.
But you're saying to me that at age 8, you were doing a whole big pot already?
Yeah, I was. And it was that kind of environment where you're a kid. You know, when you're a kid, every child deserves love.
Yeah.
And the moment you start realizing I'm not getting love, it really gets to you. It affects you as a child. And so I was in this place where people have got their own problems. They are struggling as it is. Things are hard. And they've been given another child on top of that. So at this new school, you know, you become a self-conscious kid. You're one of those kids who goes to school without food. I actually had a fainting problem when I was in primary school. And I actually thought I was sick, but it was hunger.
Oh, no.
I would faint, especially when you're at assembly point. Everybody knew I would always faint. And teachers would take me into the staff room and then they would offer me bread and tea and stuff. I was hungry.
So auntie wasn't giving you food?
She was, but it wasn't enough because there was many of us. There were many of us there. So it was given sparingly.
So as far as you know, were your parents giving auntie money to help you with food?
My dad used to come. Once in a while he would come and then he would leave money. But then what would happen was, I don't know, I was a kid. He would leave money and say this is maybe for her school books and her tuition and stuff, all the school things. I don't know if he left money for groceries. I don't want to lie. I don't know. But I know he would leave some money. But then I would go to school and then I would get sent back home, but I didn't pay school fees.
Mm.
And then I had a torn uniform. I had torn shoes. I was just that scruffy kid you would see in school. No one wanted to be friends with.
Mm.
So that was grade 3, grade 4. Oh, and you know when they cut your hair using a razor blade and you're bald?
Who's they?
Like people, when people cut your hair using a razor blade,
Yeah.
That's what they used to do to me.
Who's they? The school,
aunt,
your aunt.
My aunt.
Why would your aunt cut your hair bald?
Well, she just said it was a clean, because she had boys, young boys, who were younger than me. So when she was cutting their hair, she would cut all of us like that. And like, you know, all of you should just have clean heads. So I would be bald with a torn uniform, torn shoes, and you can imagine the picture.
Yeah.
So I was really, really, really self-conscious. It played with my confidence. I was not confident at all, because when, you know, kids can be mean sometimes. The moment you get into school, like looking like that, they'll start laughing at you. They'll start singing funny songs relating to how you're looking and all. And that was really. So at one point, I decided to write a letter, because back then there were no phones. I couldn't call them. The only communication that I knew was a letter, but then I didn't know how to send it. Like my small mind just said, you know what, I need to write a letter and tell them I need to come back and learn there. I'd rather walk the 5 kilometers to and from school than staying in town. This is just too hard for me. And then I wrote a letter, and the letter was caught. Now I was explaining everything, the situation, how it was. I'm not eating. I'm sitting at school. I don't have books. Things are like this and this and that.
Who were you writing to again?
My parents.
Mm. And the letter was caught by who?
My aunt. How? My aunt caught the letter. She found the letter in my books.
Mm.
Then she read it, and I was given a thorough beating and said, you know, you want to separate me with my brother, blah, blah, blah. You're living okay. What's wrong? And the thing is, now, when my dad would come and visit, things would be like, everything is normal. You know, it would seem like a perfect setup. Mm. But then the moment he would leave, things would go back to normal. When my dad visited, I would be a kid. I wouldn't cook. I wouldn't do anything. I would just be treated as a kid. And then when he would leave, things would go back to normal. So they never really got to see a picture of how things were. So I had a sister now who was staying in the same town. My sister was staying in the same town. So she would constantly visit, and then she realized, no, something is wrong here. And bear in mind, I was never even allowed to visit her. But she was staying in the same neighborhood, actually, not in the same town, in the same neighborhood. You just needed to walk to her place, but I would never go to her place because I wasn't allowed to go there.
Mm.
So I would only see her when she would come. And then at one point, she said, she went to see my parents, and she said, I don't think the child is okay. Something just looks so wrong. She doesn't look okay. How about I take her? Because she was married. She was just a newlywed. How about I take her and then ask maybe from aunt if I can have somebody that I can stay with to help me around with chores and stuff. That's how I had to move again from my aunt's place to my sister's place.
Yo.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I'm rewinding a little bit. I think I missed one important part. You know, when you were talking about protecting your son and how you make sure everything that you instill in him until he can be able to make his own decisions.
Yeah.
So one critical thing, this no one knows, even in my family or my friends, nobody knows about this part. Mm. When I was staying at my aunt's place, there wasn't that safe environment. I told you there were many people. Yeah. Some mm-hmm. were older. There were older boys. There mm-hmm. were older people.
Mm-hmm.
There was material there lying around that no child should have seen.
Like what?
Pornographic stuff.
What, in magazines or?
In magazines. In magazines.
Mm.
So when I was in grade 3, when I was 8 years old, I came across whole loads of that stuff. And as a child, I started reading. I'm always someone who always loved to read anything written. I would read. So I started reading these magazines and started experimenting. And then...
You started experimenting?
I started experimenting at the age of 8.
And when you say experimenting, what did experimenting mean for you?
For me, it was like, okay, magazines were talking about how to get an orgasm, how to, all those things, those deep stuff. I didn't know what it meant as a child, but when I was reading it, I got the idea.
Uh-huh.
And I started feeling things that I don't think I should have felt when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But from reading those stuff, I did. And then there was a time when I got addicted to pornography. I got addicted to masturbating for so many years.
So
I struggled.
Yeah, I'm really trying to find a delicate balance here between not taking you back in time to relive some of those moments that I think you might want to forget, but also for a bit of context for myself and for those listening, I'd like to ask mm-hmm. the question. And if I'm overstepping, please stop in my tracks and I won't ask any further.
Yeah.
But when you say you got addicted to masturbating, right, at the age of 8, and mm-hmm. whilst you were reading what was happening about how to achieve an orgasm, you tried it, and I'm guessing you enjoyed it.
I did.
And then if you become addicted to it, it means it was repetitive.
It was repetitive, yeah. And it went on for so many years, even long after I'd left that place. And it wasn't something that I could talk to anyone about it. But you know when you're doing something that you know is wrong? You know it's wrong, but there's nothing that you can do about it because you're just hooked.
Mm.
It was like that. I would really feel so dirty and I don't know, but there was nothing I could do about it and I couldn't talk to anyone about it.
Yeah.
So now... I left my aunt's place and I went to stay with my sister.
Mm.
And then now when I was staying with my sister, life changed. Life was good. I started having a new uniform, new shoes. I started taking food to school, pocket money to school. People just noticed a huge difference. Like I was a totally different person.
Mm.
things really changed, and it was good. It was amazing. I was happy for the first few years. Then primary school was over. Then when I was in form two, I was 14 by then. Yeah. We are going to call this guy Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler was my sister's husband.
How old were you?
I was 14. I was 14. So I stayed with my sister and her husband from the age of, I think, 10.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I was 12, Hitler, he was more like a father to me than my sister's husband, because I stayed with this guy when I was a kid. Fast forward, when I was in form two now, Hitler comes to my room where I was sleeping, and then he says, so now Hitler used to give me pocket money to take to school, and my sister sometimes would give me, and he could give me. It was all okay. Mm. And now in this particular incident, he comes into my room and he knocks on the door, and then he gives me a bunch. Like, it was really a bunch. It was a lot. And then he says, here's money to take to school. I'm like, no, that looks like it's a lot. Why is it a lot? He says, no, you can just put it in your bag or in your drawers anyway. Just take it there, but don't tell your sister about it.
Mm.
Like, okay. Why shouldn't I tell my sister? I was like, no, you know, she's just overprotective, and with money, she'll think you're wasting. But I know you need money at school, you know, so just take it. Don't worry about it. And then I think, maybe it's genuine. I don't know. I take the money and I start spending the money at school. And then one other day, Hitler calls when he's at work to talk to my sister. And he says, can you send Mirembe to town? I need to give you some groceries to bring home. Mm. My sister sends me to town and says, I've got to town. Hitler wants to give you stuff to bring back home. So it was around 6. But we were living in a small town, so you could walk even when it was dark. It was really pretty much a safe town. So I got to town around 6. I get there, and then Hitler tells me to come to his office. I go to his office, and then he says, okay, you can come in. I get in, and then he closes the door, and then he locks the door, and he switches off the light. And now it's dark already. I'm like, why are you switching off the light? And then he said, you know, I need to have a conversation with you. That's a very important conversation. I need the lights to be off.
Mm.
And I said, I'm really not comfortable with having a conversation in the dark. I think you should switch on the light. And then he just said, no, it's okay. You'll be fine. Then we sit there in the dark. And then he says, the reason why I called you here is, remember the money that I gave you? I really like you. And I think my liking has grown into something more than liking. I would really want you to be my girlfriend. So I'm going to open a bank account for you, because I remember he mentioned those three things. I said, I'm going to open a bank account for you, and then I'll be putting some funds in there for you, so that when you're done with school, you'll have money in that account. And then I'm going to buy you a phone. I remember back then I said there were no phones. I'm going to buy you a phone. Then, you know, I'm just going to buy you clothes, anything that you want. I'm just going to do that. But I just want you to know that I love you, and I want you to love me.
Mm-mm.
I am 14, Tinto. And now I'm scared. The door is locked. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know if he's just saying these things or he wants to do something. I am scared. And then I just start crying. I say, can you please open the door? I need to go home. And he says, no, you need to answer me. I'll open the door when you answer me. Then I started crying. And then he said, no, it's okay. You can go. If you want to think about it, I'm going to give you time. You can think about it. And then he opens the door. And he gives me the groceries. And then I leave. I go back home. Now I'm asking myself, should I tell my sister? Is she going to believe me?
Mm.
Since he didn't do anything, I just told myself, since he didn't touch me, he didn't do anything. Let me just keep quiet. So I didn't say anything to my sister. I just went back home with the groceries and kept quiet. And then Hitler comes back home later. And then when my sister is there in her bedroom, he comes again. My sister is around. he comes again, but it all seems so innocent because, you know, we've been together for a long time. And he comes again into the room and says, don't forget what we talked about. I need an answer tomorrow.
Mm.
Then I got to sleep, but I didn't sleep that night. I couldn't sleep. I was scared. And then it went on and on. Like, he would constantly remind me. Any moment my sister would disappear or would be out of sight, he would then ask me, what did you say about that issue? To an extent where it affected me so much, my grades in school started dropping.
Mm.
I was going to an A school, Tindo. I was in a first class. My grades were really okay. I was doing very well. But then it started affecting me. Now I don't know what to think. I'm afraid to go home. I'm asking myself, is my sister going to be home or not? When I get there, I'm just constantly scared because I don't know if he's going to do something or not. And then one particular time now, my sister had to travel out of town. And then because it had happened before, my sister would leave me with headline. She would come back. Oh, would be fine. So now she says, you know, I need to travel again. I'll be back after a week. It's now the two of us. You know?
Yeah. After a week, she was just going to be back after 1 week.
So it's now just me and Hitler. My sister is gone.
Mm.
He starts. Oh, so before, sorry, just rewinding back again. Before Hitler told me these things, there were certain things that he would do that after he said, he told me that he wanted me, started making sense. Like, I remember when it was Valentine's Day, he bought my sister some flowers. I can't remember with what as well, maybe a cup. And then he bought me a wool outfit, like what did we call those things? Like, it was a bottom trousers and a top. I don't know what it was called, and a necklace. And it seemed like my stuff made sense than what he had bought my sister.
Mm.
But at that time, I was like, okay. Even my sister didn't question it. She was just okay, because why would you think of anything over a child who is 14? So now when he was telling me these things, he started counting back to those things and say, you remember all those things that I've been doing for you, even on Valentine's Day, I bought you all that because I wanted really you to know that I want you to be my Valentine, blah, blah, blah. So now when my sister is gone, Hitler starts being on my case every day, every time. He's like, you know, what are you saying? Because I really need to know. I mean, as soon as you're done with your form four, I need to marry you. You know, it's a good thing you'll be doing your sister a favor, because if I marry someone who's not from the family, then it's really going to affect your sister, but she won't have a problem if it's her sister. You know, she'll be living with her.
So hang on. This guy is starting to talk to you about marriage.
Yeah. I'm
14. He's effectively grooming you.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the word. Yeah, he did.
Mm.
So, on one particular incident, then it was he had come back from work, and then he just, like, you know, I was seated on a chair, and then started leaning over me and, you know, whispering in my ears to say, you know, you really need to give me an answer. And then I just got out of the house running because I was scared. You know, you never know if someone is going to do something or not. I just got out of the house and ran. So there was a nearby shop where there was a phone shop. They used to have those phone shops where you could go and pay to call, to make a phone call. So I ran to that shop, and then I asked to make a phone call. And then I called my sister, my other sister, not the one that I, not Hitler's wife. I called my other sister, and then I just started crying. And then she said, why? What's wrong? Talk to me. And then I told her, yes. This has been happening for the longest time now. I'm tired and I'm scared. I don't know. I can't go back home and sleep, because what if he does something to me? And then my sister says, okay, don't worry, go back home. I don't think he's going to do anything, because if he wanted to do anything, I'm sure he'd have done it by now. Maybe, you know, the grooming part that you mentioned, but I don't think he's going to sexually abuse you. So she says, just go back home, and then I'll find a way to make sure we deal with this situation. Now I'm in Form 3. That means this thing went over for over a year.
Mm.
Now I'm in Form 3 and my second term. And then my sister calls my parents and she tells them what's going on. my parents call a family meeting. So family meeting would be my dad, my mom, my sister and her husband, my other sister and me.
Mm.
And when we go for the family meeting, okay, so before they called this meeting, when they called the meeting, they just said she must bring all her clothes because she's moving from that place.
Mm.
So now I'm in Form 3. I'm about to write my exams and I'm moving again.
Mm.
So I took all my clothes and everything, and then we went to another town where the family meeting was being held. And then my dad starts talking now. So the child called and explained this and this and this has been happening. Is it true? And then Hitler says, Hitler's just started, you know, laughing and saying, kids, you know, when you think you've done everything that you can for them, they'll just turn around and bite you. This child, I've treated her as my child. I never did anything of that sort. Why would I do that when I see just a small child in her? Why would I do that? Even you as older people, do you think I could do something like that?
Mm.
And so it became sort of like a divided meeting where my dad was kind of believing Hitler and my mom was believing me, and my sister she was caught in between because this is her husband. So she, you know, I don't know, she felt like she had to be on her side, on his side. So now Hitler started telling them, you know, when you're a kid, I'm informed too, you're bound to have guy friends, you have all those people that you talk with, you're a kid. And then he started turning around the issue and saying, actually, this child has been naughty. So she's now playing with boys. She's now coming home late, doing God knows what. So I was trying to discipline her. So maybe in my disciplining her, she didn't take it well and decided to lie.
Oh, my God.
I did this and did this and this. And just rewinding a little bit, there was a guy from church, from my church. This guy was a little bit older, but, you know, we would have singing groups at church. And we used to sing together with this guy. So he was sort of like a brother, an elder brother, but from church. Those kind of relationships from church where there was really nothing. He didn't want me. He had a girlfriend of his own. He was about to get married. He just saw a kid in me that he liked. And we would sing together and stuff. So he would visit even sometimes at home with other kids. And then they would come and maybe if we're going for camps, he was the one that would come and talk to my sister and Hitler to say, you know, we have a camp at church, we need to take the child, blah, blah, blah. So Hitler apparently suspected that this guy was dating me. Behind my back, I didn't know that happened. He had connections, Hitler had connections, was friends with the police and stuff. And then they went to this guy's place. They started questioning him as to why are you dating a child? And this guy told them, you know, I'm not dating a child. And then they took him and they took him to the camp and they tortured him at Hitler's command.
Oh, my gosh.
They tortured the guy. They tortured the guy until he confessed something that wasn't even happening because they had tortured him enough. So when he came, now at the family meeting, he then mentions that, you know, actually she was dating someone from their church. And someone was way older. This guy was now even affecting her schoolwork. So I had to intervene. The police actually beat that guy until he told the truth and he confessed that he was dating her. So now the whole issue turned and it was on me instead of the issue being addressed as Hitler is the... He now became the victim and I was someone who was wrong and was naughty and, you know... My mom actually gave me a slap in that meeting. And she said, how could you do that? How could you do that? You should be a child focusing on your school and now you're doing boyfriends. Then she slapped me.
So your mom moved from believing you to not believing you when you dropped this other component of the story.
Yeah. She went from believing me to then seeing this other side of a naughty child.
And your sister?
My sister was just, because when Hitler would tell these stories, he would ask for confirmation from my sister, like, am I lying? My sister would be like, no, you're not. No, you're not. So I now start staying with my other sister, the one that I called. And then Hitler and his wife, they go back to their home. And then I start. So now I'm in form three. I'm looking for a place for a third term place at a different school in a different town where even the vernacular language is different. So now I went from doing 9 subjects to doing 5 subjects, one of which was a vernacular language that I had never learned before. So I went from doing 9 subjects to doing 4 subjects. When you know you need 5 subjects at A level, at O level. And some of these, I wasn't even doing them. And one practical that I started doing there was something that was totally new. It was so hard being in class because I went from an A school, from an A class to a school that had nothing that I was doing at my former school. And now my this is where your future starts. You're laying the foundation of what you want to be. You know, I had dreams. When I'm done with school, I'm going to study this. I'm going to go to my A levels, and then I'm going to go to uni. I'm going to do this and that. But it all crashed. And for the longest time, I was so, so bitter towards Hitler because I felt if he had just allowed me to be a kid and continue doing my school, I would have been far. I would have been far in life.
Yeah.
But because of all that, I'm here. And obviously I didn't pass because I'm doing new subjects. I just passed the few that I knew, but the rest I failed. And I had to rewrite again to get my O levels. So fast forward again, my sister, the one that I was staying with now, then moves to South Africa. And then now I have to go and stay with my brother. Take note, I'm constantly moving.
I've already made note of that. And there is no stability in any of your environment.
No.
In any form.
Yeah.
So you couldn't get into a pattern, you couldn't get into a routine.
No, I couldn't. So now when my sister has moved, I have to stay with my brother. And then after a while of staying, my brother and his family also relocated. And guess who is left now to stay with? Hitler.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So the whole issue was disregarded to say, you know, but guys, I left that place because of this and this and this. How is it going to look now that I'm going back there? But where can you go? There's nowhere else to go except there. So now I packed my bags, I go back to Hitler's place. And now Hitler is like, you see what God does. When you lie, life has a way of just making the truth come out in the open. Now you're back. Now you're back. Yeah. So it was really hard. It was really hard for me because for the longest time I was just so miserable, scared and hurt, and I was like to myself, why me? Oh, sorry. There was a time when I was staying with my brother. So my brother's wife had a brother. When I think I was 16 there, I was 15, 16 thereabouts. So this guy, he was way, way old. I think he was in his early 30s or late 20s, I'm not sure. But I was 15. Remember, this is a child who has already been exposed to pornography and stuff. This guy, it would be the two of us in the house. And then, you know, he started coming on to me and he made me do things that I shouldn't have done. And I don't know. At one point, this guy, I think that was years after that, he looked for me on Facebook and he sent me a very long message to say, you know, hi, this is so and so. Remember, we once stayed together. I recently got married and I feel if I'm to start a good life, I should apologize for what I did. He didn't sleep with me, we didn't have sex, but we did deep stuff. deep stuff that no child should have done.
I'm not even going to ask what that was.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to know.
Yeah. So now I'm back with Hitler. Now I'm staying with Hitler. But, you know, as someone who is bitter as well, that his image was tarnished, he's not happy. So life is not happy. He's going to make life hell. It was bad. It wasn't good. It wasn't good at all. You know, he would always be shouting. Any slight mistake, he would make sure he just shouts and shouts until you really feel that, yeah, I shouldn't be here, but I have nowhere else to be. And so this whole thing, it just made me, okay. One other thing about me, Tinto, up to this day, I'm not sure whether I want to have kids or not. And already I'm in my 30s. I got so scared of having kids of my own because of my upbringing. And it has affected my relationships a lot, because if I get in a relationship with someone and then we start discussing serious things about life and I open up and tell them, you know what, I don't want to have kids. And no guy doesn't want to have kids. They do want to have kids. And for me, I feel so strongly about this thing because I don't want any child to go through what I went through. So I'm just going to tell somebody, you know what, I love you and all, but I'm not going to have kids. And the relationship just ends there because this person is going to tell you, I want to be a father one day. So I can't go ahead with a relationship where I'm not going to be a father. But on my part as well, I am still way too scared to bring a life into this earth. And maybe I feel somehow I'm not competent enough to be a mother. I won't be able to, because I never had an example of how motherhood should be. How a child should be taken care of, how a child should be protected.
And this is because you weren't around your mother long enough.
Because I wasn't around my mother long enough. And I got exposed. I feel like if you are a parent and you are there, you watch what your kids watch. You see what your kids are exposed to. You protect them from, you know, things that expose them to adulthood at an age where it's not, you know, when they're not ready to be adults. And I didn't get that. So I that's one thing that happens with me. And also the other thing that I've noticed in the pattern of my relationships is if a relationship is toxic, I tend to stay, because my whole life has been filled with toxic relationships, starting from family-wise. So toxic is normal to me. Someone shouting at me, in as much as it might hurt, it's normal to me, because people do that. People don't treat you well. People can treat you however they want to, but that's life. I stay where I see all the red flags, where I see I shouldn't be here, I stay. And then the other side also that I feel has affected me, I think I've had so many relationships in my life where I'm constantly moving as well. When I move again. So it's kind of like a mixture of staying in a toxic relationship, and then in other relationships, I'm just moving. Even a slight, like, I know no relationships are perfect. Like, remember the date that I was telling you about that I canceled? When people fight in a relationship, one of those normal fights in a relationship, I just call it quits. Because in my mind, I'm telling myself, okay, it's time to move now. Because I'm always moving. I've always been moving. So I will continue moving. Which is not a good thing, but I think it's something that has really made me who I am today.
Well, it's a coping mechanism, and I don't know who needs to make the call on whether that's a good thing or that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a coping mechanism.
Yeah. Yeah, so That's been my coping mechanism. So I feel if parents understood how important motherhood or fatherhood is, just do everything in your power to make sure your kids are with you. It's not about money, it's not about food, it's about your presence and you grooming them into the best people that you want them to be.
Mm.
Because whatever, however they turn out to be, is based on the environment that they grow up in as kids. They become like that in their adulthood. And now that's where we go to lesson three, that, you know, heal, forgive. I think on the forgiveness part, I'd like to thank God there, because I finally came to a point where I forgive all the people that I felt wronged me in my childhood. And even Hitler, I have no bitter feelings towards him now. There was a point where I couldn't even stand looking at him, because I blamed all my failures on him. But then I just made a conscious decision to say, you know what, as long as I'm still alive, I can still start again. I can still study. I can still achieve the same goals that I always wanted to achieve, though it's taken longer, but I can still do that. So I've learned to forgive him and to heal slowly. I'm not yet completely healed, but it's a process. I believe it's a process, and I'll get there.
You know, being a parent and hearing this is incredibly difficult for me.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
I guess what I can take away from this with confidence for you is basically what you said at the tail end of this, which is that this has been a process for you. And you are where you are, and you're able to forgive. And I think you can only forgive once you've healed.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a chicken and egg situation, because people then say you can't heal until you forgive. Mm-hmm. And you can't forgive until you've healed.
Yeah.
But regardless of what that looks like between chicken and egg, you have taken ownership, which is your lesson number two, that it's not entirely your fault that you're broken.
Mm-hmm.
So you're recognizing that you are the way that you are, and you're also recognizing what has happened in between.
Yeah.
I'm just grateful that you are in a position where you don't attribute what has happened to people, and you continue to punish them, because in allowing them to be free, you freed yourself of what that impact has been on you.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say too much more beyond this, because this hits home too closely for me as a parent, and I think for all other parents out there who are trying to do the best that they can for their children. But in the same breath, right? For any parents out there who've had children, not as a result of sexual abuse, you've had a child because, one, you either want to have one, or you've had a mistake, in quotes, which I don't believe happens, but you have a child. For the love of God, you've been made the custodian of a soul, right? Do the right thing.
Yeah.
Because what your story has just done is taken me back to two episodes that were incredibly painful again for me, because of what parents do, which is episodes 103 and episode 104.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called the court system part one and the court system part two. And what happened is my guest was left in the hands of other people to take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. Well, they did, but not in a way that is wholesome.
Yeah.
And the whole time the parents are away, they're abroad, and they are sending this money, hoping that the money is sufficient. There are too many reminders for us in people's experiences that being away from a child will never result in a good thing for them.
Never does.
It just doesn't work. And there's no amount of money that you can pour at a child that will make it right.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember who the guest was on the Diary for CEO episode that I saw. And I just remember now, it's Damon Dash.
Okay.
And if anybody's on Twitter, I will put the clip, because I recorded it and I stored it for myself because it spoke to me as a parent. To say there's no amount of cash you can give a child that will make them happy. He says they don't give two shits, and they don't.
Yeah, that's true.
And even you, Mirembe, are living testimony. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
How much was given to your aunts or your sister or whatever. The fact that you didn't have mom and dad in front of you for them to nurture and nurture you.
Yeah.
Is now impacting how your relationships are with people who are coming into your intimate space.
It is.
I'm grateful you've shared this because you've highlighted a message that I hope people really take away from this and think very seriously about children in their lives. If you're choosing to have unprotected sex and running the risk of having a child, and you're proclaiming to yourself as a man or as a woman that I don't want to have children, please stop having unprotected sex.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the moment that life comes into this world, it did not ask to be brought into this world. It came into this world because you chose to be irresponsible. Now put it upon yourselves to be responsible people enough to take care of a soul that God has blessed you with, period.
Yeah.
Anything outside of this is rambling on about what doesn't matter. Mirembe, I am so grateful that you've come out to share this and you spoke with confidence. You spoke without shedding a tear. You spoke with so much conviction.
Yeah, thank you, Tinta.
I pray that God continues to add to your soul and edify you in more ways than you can ever imagine.
Thank you so much.
Whatever strength that you've been able to summon now to tell the story, I hope you manage to summon to empower yourself to be bigger and greater than you already are.
Thank you.
And just as a reminder, which is a teaching that I received from church just yesterday, was that God's giants are always his weakest people. Think about Gideon.
Yeah.
Think about Samson. Think about David. Think about Moses. Moses stuttered, but he led the children out of Egypt. Right? He always uses the weakest to be his biggest giants. Whatever it is that has happened in your past and that made you weak spiritually, emotionally, financially, whatever it did to weaken you, is the foundation for you to identify that you have a weakness and you need support and you lean on God to take you onto whatever it is to make you better. Or you lean on whatever you believe in. Doesn't need to be God.
Yeah, that's powerful.
To strengthen you. So I'm just going to wrap this up by playing back the lessons that she shared. Number one, parenthood is a ministry. And now I get why you describe it as a ministry. Because it's a calling from a higher power other than you to recreate life and take care of life. And you went on to say that it's one of the most significant ways anyone can influence the life of another. Yeah. You couldn't have said this any better. And then you go on to say, don't put the responsibility on somebody else. Yeah. Amen to that. And then your second lesson, it's not entirely your fault that you're broken. This is evidence, and you telling this story to the feelers listening today is evidence that you've had a moment of introspection and you've realized you are not the problem and you've forgiven the problem. Which then allows you to go into lesson number three, which is heal. Forgive and make a conscious commitment to yourself to move on.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody will do that for you. And you couldn't have said this any better. Absolutely nobody's going to ring a bell and say, hey, Mirembe, now it's time for you to heal and forgive.
Yeah.
You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your future. And I hope that as you make this decision within yourself over time, whether you want to be with someone long term and whether you want to be with children, you find that answer. And if it helps in any shape, size, or form, if you're questioning or thinking about what parenthood might feel like for me, it happens to be the best experience of my adult life.
Is it?
Yeah, it has made me grow in ways I could never make you understand.
Wow.
And if you have questions about that and you want to understand what that impact has been for me, I'm opening my door for me to share that experience with you.
Thank you. Without saying that
you should do it, because parenthood means different things to different people. But I'll just share my side of the story.
I know. I'll share the
challenges, but the challenges are far less than the benefits and the joys.
Wow.
Of having my little man. So yeah. I will end it there. For those who've made it this far to this part of the episode, I just want to thank you. And Mirembe, I wish I could give you the world's biggest hug from here.
Thank you, Tinta.
Just to say thank you for being so real and thank you for being so open. Your story and the lessons are deeply, deeply appreciated.
Thank you.
You've been listening to another episode of The Feeling Station. I'm your host, Tinto, and I will catch you in next weekend's episode. Peace. Come on.